Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he always does on the occasions on which we sit here behind the microphones and talk about things about tech, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Is this a kissing book? So today we're going to address the question, will technology revolutionize education?
Yes.
No.
Maybe.
Okay, we got the bases covered. Let's dive in.
All right, then. I feel better.
Emily, we love you.
She may not even be listening anymore.
Yeah, she might have moved on to bigger and better podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no such thing. All right, so we wanted to talk about, this is another in our series, obviously, on education and technology.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to talk about the possibility, the potential for technology to revolutionize education and the way that teachers teach students. And kind of talk about the difference between the tool and the method.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's funny because we sort of set that up as a joke when we did the yes, no, maybe. But I think all three
it's
are
true.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so, you know, there's the potential, but
yeah, it's just like any other tool.
Mm-hmm.
If you hand someone a tool but do not tell that person how to use it,
mm-hmm.
then you can't expect the person to become an expert with that tool. You know, and be able to produce anything of any value without lots and lots and lots of time. And that means the person has to be really motivated
mm-hmm.
to master that tool. despite the frustrations of not really understanding how to use it. Mm-hmm. And that's just that's too big a burden. Most of us, I would not hesitate to say that most people, if given a really advanced tool but they were given no help in how to use it, would abandon it. There'd be a few who would be intrigued enough to try and master it, but I think an overwhelming percentage of us, and I include myself in that, would get frustrated and find better ways to use our time.
I find myself doing that with a number of software programs, frankly.
Yeah, there are times where – well, here's a good example. This is nothing – we didn't discuss this beforehand, but here's an excellent example. We did a podcast about this particular tool ages ago, and just recently it went away. Google Wave.
Yeah, that's
so
a good example.
Google Wave was a really innovative tool, and as we record this podcast, it's just shortly after Google pulled the plug on Wave.
Yeah, I think they're just going to leave it, and you can use it the way it is, but I don't think they're ever going to work on it.
They're not supporting development money.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything new with it.
So Google Wave was this really interesting idea, the execution of which was so confusing that I think most people never really got a grip on the best way to use the tool. Here we go. We've got this really advanced tool that can do lots of things, but without any direction on how to use it and real case scenarios of how this could be useful. Most people tried it maybe once or twice and then found it to be so overwhelming and confusing that they were like, well, there's no use for this for me, and they stopped coming back to it. Chris and I are in that camp.
Yeah.
You know, we did find a specific use for it, but then that specific use went away.
Yeah, that was the funny thing too. It wasn't so much that it wasn't terribly confusing, but there were a lot of situations in which you try to use it for something, you go, you know what, this is not the right tool
I'm spending too much time trying to make it work. Make it work, yeah. Right. Instead of having it work right off the bat. And you could see that there were potential applications, but they were so specific that if you didn't have a need for that, then Google Wave was just, you know, it was easy enough to forget about it, because unless that specific case came up, there's no point in going to it. So there's an example of a technology that in theory should be amazing, should be incredibly useful, and a great collaborative tool and a great communications tool, but in practice it fell apart. The same can be said about technology and education and across the board. And it could be something as simple as just a regular laptop computer, which a lot of us take for granted. You know, a lot of us have been used to using computers. Some of you out there have been using computers ever since you can, you know, as far back as you can remember.
Sure.
Now, that's not the case with us, because we're old enough to remember when personal computers were very uncommon, although we both jumped on the bandwagon pretty early.
True. True enough. I do remember monochrome monitors. So
yes, yeah, I also remember those. So again, it's easy enough to take that for granted, because they've been, you know, computers have been around long enough now so that the current generation of students have grown up with them. But that does not necessarily mean that, you know, just by throwing computers in a classroom, you've made education easy and accessible and effective.
That's right.
So. Let's kind of talk about how technology can affect education and how, you know, where we place the importance on the method of teaching.
Okay.
One interesting thing I read was a case study that was being done where students were taking a learning style assessment.
Yes.
Test.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all have different learning styles, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Some of us are much better if we hear information, then we can process it and we're good to go. Some of us have to see it.
Yeah.
Personally, for me, the way that I learned, and this is something that that still applies today, is that I needed to see why you did something a specific way, not just how to do it, why it had to be done that way for it to make sense to me.
Because
without it making sense, It was just information.
Right.
And I couldn't put it into context, and it was ultimately meaningless to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could explain a chemical reaction to me and explain to me why the chemical reaction happens the way it does, then it totally made sense. But if you just gave me the, you know, acid, base, salt, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I could regurgitate those facts, but it didn't. There was no real comprehension there.
Right. Right.
So really, I think the technology in the classrooms question, it's a great tool, but what that really means is that we have to focus on teaching students how to think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, definitely so. The Sugar Learning System, which is a operating system that is geared toward elementary school students, or primarily toward them, primarily, basically is designed. It was designed for the One Laptop Per Child project, but it can be used on any computer. You can use what they call it, Sugar on a Stick, which is a USB implementation of that.
It's also tasty. Rock candy.
Nah. Rock candy is. Sugar on a Stick is tastes like silicon. And
not
lead.
Tasty.
I wouldn't suggest silicon and lead.
This tastes like sand and blindness.
Yes. And rage. Anyway... Thanks a lot. Basically, one of the things behind the operating system, I mean, other than to be simple enough that people speaking many languages can use it, a lot of it is visual and not necessarily language oriented, although it has been localized in many instances. One of the benefits to this is that it teaches critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of unique, I think, in the idea of bringing technology into the classroom. Because, I mean, it's one thing to drop a PC in front of somebody and go, here you go, there's the internet. That's got everything.
And done.
Yeah.
Here's your diploma. Get the hell out.
Honestly, that's some people's approach.
Yeah.
But, teaching kids how to think for themselves is sort of unheard of in some circles, you know, and it's nice to see that people are trying to take that into account when they are developing technology, and they're also recruiting people to make more applications for the operating system, and it's a free and open source OS, so it really gets many, many people involved and tries to get the end user, in this case the students, to think for themselves.
Yeah, and if you guys have been listening to our show for a while, you know that I've stressed critical thinking mm-hmm. multiple times, and that's something that I wish had been stressed to me earlier in my educational experience.
Sure.
By the time I was starting to hear the term critical thinking, it was pretty late in my high school. I guess it would have to be junior or senior year in high school. And then, of course, I heard it throughout college. And critical thinking is really, really important. It doesn't really matter so much what tools you have at your disposal as much as learning to think critically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having great tools at your disposal makes that both easier and I'm having a zombie advance on me as I'm trying to do this. But having the tools at your disposal makes critical thinking easier to do.
Yes.
But it does not, it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, you could say, will technology revolutionize education? You could almost say no,
mm-hmm.
because what would revolutionize education is making sure that you're teaching students how to think. But I think technology makes that easier. It also makes it easier to engage students.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about that learning assessment, and I was talking about my own way of learning. I kind of lost the whole point of that. I introduced it, but I didn't really get at it. The point of that was to if you have a classroom where each student has access to a laptop computer, let's say, mm-hmm. as an example,
mm-hmm.
and each student takes a learning assessment test, and the program determines the best way for that student to learn.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, if you are using an electronic syllabus, let's say,
sure,
a teacher could present a certain class, a lesson, and then all the materials that were related to that lesson would be filtered to the student through the laptop in the method that was the most effective method for that student to learn in.
It's feasible.
Which is, to me, mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to remember, when we went to school, the way you learned really ultimately didn't matter, because the person sitting next to you did not necessarily learn that same way, and the teacher did not necessarily teach in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to try and adjust your learning preference to the way the teacher taught.
Right.
The teachers are just they're not able to teach in a way that's going to hit every student effectively. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's not that the teachers are...
It's not impossible, but you would really need to group students into groups who of similar learning styles to make it work.
Based upon our resources.
Right.
Okay, based upon the number of teachers
right.
compared to the number of students, it's impossible. Because we don't have enough teachers and enough space to group students in class sizes small enough for that to be an effective approach.
Mm-hmm.
At least not across the entire country. In some school districts, that may be possible, and that is amazing and wonderful. And I want to stress, I am the son of two teachers. I want to stress that I respect teachers. There are no words to express mm-hmm. how gratified I am toward them. But they are fighting a losing battle mm-hmm. when it comes to trying to teach and engage every student. It's just not going to happen. Technology helps that, makes that a little less difficult. I'm not going to say that with technology we're suddenly going to have a nation of engaged students, every single one of whom is eager and willing to learn at every day at school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it makes it easier because if you can determine that each student's learning style, and if you can tailor the lessons electronically so that the student has the best chance of grasping a concept, understanding it, and being able to apply it, then it makes engaging that student much easier.
Yes.
I think a lot of students would be engaged if they didn't feel like they were not getting it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, if you could teach every student to his or her particular style, I think you would have fewer bored students in class.
Yes.
You would have more engagement overall. It would be a really amazing, I think you'd see a really amazing outcome from that.
Yeah.
I was just going to mention, too, if you're interested in learning your learning style, I wasn't long ago that one of my professors in my graduate school studies suggested the VARC learning assessment,
mm-hmm.
Which is really neat and free. And you can find that at VARC-learn.com.
Excellent.
So, if you're curious, there's a quick questionnaire. It takes just a few minutes to fill out, and you can find out how you learn, which actually may affect the way you use technology to learn, because maybe you can find, you know, once you've identified these things, they'll probably seem sort of self-evident. You'll go, oh, yeah, well, I knew that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to kind of have somebody go, okay, well, based on what you've told us, this is what we think. And,
right.
It could be useful.
And for some people, it's all about getting hands-on experience with something.
Yes.
For others, it's, you know, hearing it all intellectualized. It depends from one person to the next. Some people tend to be really good at all of them, and I hate them.
Well,
unless you listen to tech stuff.
Well, some people are self-directed, too.
Yeah.
Others need the teacher or professor to, you know, go through it step by step.
Certainly.
For me, I think it sort of depends on the topic.
Yeah. For example, in symbolic logic, I found that I could direct myself so effectively that I would attend class 2 days out of five, and I aced it. But in other classes, mm-hmm. That was certainly not the case. So it's not like I was some sort of genius. It was just that, for whatever reason, symbolic logic was one of those things that just clicked.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's – again, with the technology, we can identify that – or at least have the potential to identify that early on with students and hopefully maximize each student's potential to learn.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there are some other ways that technology really could revolutionize education. Here's just a simple example. Consider a social studies course or a geography course.
Okay.
And then think of a virtual globe program. And I'm just going to use Google Earth as the example because it's the one I'm the most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, Google Earth allows you to apply various layers to the globe, the virtual globe you're looking at, which can be helpful in dozens or hundreds of different applications in an educational format. So theoretically, you could create a version of Google Earth that would show you what the civilizations looked like in medieval Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see things like the size of Paris compared to the size of London, and see like how far widespread certain civilizations were, and even incorporate things like multimedia and movies so that if you wanted to explore a particular concept even further, it'd be easy enough to do that. With modern day geography, you could show how borders have shifted over as little as a decade ago, how borders have shifted. And you can even show things like through pictures and video and that sort of thing, the conditions of that particular region, the people who live there, the kind of lives they lead, which I think would lead to a much deeper understanding of various cultures and regions throughout the world. In my experience, we got all that by reading from a textbook. But words on a page don't, you know, of course they always say a picture's worth a thousand words. Words on a page don't have the same impact as seeing this stuff, if not in person, then at least through video and things like that. So when I think about the potential of using technology to relate something along those lines, I think it really is revolutionary. It just requires a teacher with the savvy and approach to use it at its most effective level for it to become a reality.
Well, I mean, speaking of textbooks, one of the that's one of the advantages of having something like a virtual book or an ebook. If you have the right device that you can read it on, where you can embed different kinds of technology in the page, you could actually see a video of, you know, the people being discussed, you know, or see pictures of them. You might even be able to, if it were connected to the internet, you know, get an update based on, you know, what's going on. And this is the way people looked, you know, in this region 50 years ago. This is the way they are now. And that's one ability that the web has that, you know, the World Book Yearbook 1966 didn't. You know, back when I was a kid, we were using primarily paper encyclopedias. You know, you'd have the, honestly, you'd have the encyclopedia salesperson coming door to door trying to sell you a set of books, or your parents really, a set of books. And the thing is, you were expected to buy a yearbook every year that would give you updates.
Exactly.
But, you know, frankly, you know, once you had a set of encyclopedias and it was from 1972, you know, for your older brother or sister, you know, it's 1978. You're going, well, I mean, this stuff is 6 years old. And then, you know, you get into middle school in 1984 and you go, man, this thing is getting pretty ancient. It's pretty outdated information. Now you can go online to the web and find pretty good resources. I mean, you can go to Britannica.com and get, you know, fairly recent, you know, articles about virtually anything.
Right.
And it's you can be pretty well assured that these are scholarly resources that have been researched by somebody who knows what they're doing. And it's recent, and you don't have to worry about whether or not your teacher's going to give you a lecture about, come on, can't you find something newer than this?
Yeah, and technology has certainly revolutionized access to information to the point where now the problem isn't finding information about the topic you want to study. It's filtering that information in such a way that it's meaningful. But we'll talk about that. We've got a plan for a future podcast specifically. This was actually a listener request to specifically address how to use the web and the internet to research topics in an effective manner. But that is certainly one of the ways that technology has been in the process of revolutionizing education.
Well, certainly, you know, we have a school media center, and it's really got limited size and limited financial resources behind it. Having an opportunity to be on something like, here in Georgia, we've got Galileo, which is a part of the university system in Georgia, and it's got access to thousands of different scholarly resources, peer-reviewed articles, other kinds of information that you wouldn't physically be able to house or afford by the school itself, or even the school system.
It's an invaluable resource.
You know, things like that.
It's something that we here at How Stuff Works use quite often because it allows us to access scholarly journals that otherwise we would have to have, you know, we'd have to have 200 subscriptions. And where do we put all that stuff once we get it? That tool has really made research much easier and far more effective than before. I mean, before you pretty much had to, you know, just hope that whatever you had was adequate to the task at hand.
Well, that's that one benefit too of a system like that, and I'm sure there are probably comparable resources in many, you know, many of the states in the United States and probably elsewhere around the world, is the ability for somebody to, a student to access that in their school media center and then go home or go to their public library nearby and get access to that. If they have an internet connection and a computer available to them, they're going to be familiar with the system already. And it's not where they have to learn two or three separate systems. They're already acquainted with it, and they're should be comfortable with it. Of course, it requires a certain level of information literacy and training, which is also part of, you know, having the teachers and media specialists having the time and in some cases know-how to explain what's going on to them.
Yeah, really what's required there is a support system for the educators so that they themselves can not only know how to use the tools, but how to use the tools in the most effective manner. Because I've talked a lot about how teachers need to be able to explain to students how to use these tools. That means that the teachers need to learn it too. Yeah. And some teachers are going to find that more challenging than others because this is a completely new way to them. And often a lot of our school systems don't have they don't give the teachers the resources they need to increase their skill sets in such a way that's meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, you know, my heart goes out to all the teachers out there, but yeah, sometimes they're really fighting against the system in order to get the tools they need to do a good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is going to be sad to many of our younger listeners who are still in school, but yeah, once you get out of college with your degree, you will probably be engaging in some sort of professional development for the entirety of your career, especially if you are passionate about your job, like so many of the educators with whom I have worked over the years.
I mean, it that goes to things that you know, stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think would be applicable.
Sure.
Like even if you're just, you know, even if you decide to go into, say, white collar office environment, I mean, you have systems change all the time. So without that literacy, that technological literacy, those changes can be really, really tough. Mm-hmm. Even with that literacy, they can be challenging because I can tell you, as someone who has experienced multiple upgrades over the course of my professional career, even as someone who knows how computers work and I'm familiar with different UIs and all that kind of stuff, even I find it challenging whenever there's a significant change. I'm reminded of when the last time we updated our word processor, and I was crying because all the things that I used were in different places now.
Yes.
Why do you do that? Microsoft, I'm looking at you. Not to call you out, Microsoft, but seriously, when you upgrade your systems, why do you have to rearrange where everything is?
I think if you say the name of the developer twice, you're probably calling them out.
What, Microsoft?
Three times.
Yeah.
So anyhow.
Well, I'm sure that if I were using some other system, like if I were – the same thing is true for others as well. I remember distinctly upgrading from – I think it was WordPerfect 4.2 to WordPerfect 5.1 and thinking, what did you do? I can't find anything anymore.
Yeah.
All my shortcuts don't work anymore. Yeah. And that's an argument for UI design. So.
When we were talking about the classroom of the future
in the previous podcast.
We were I mentioned the study that we ran across in Der Spiegel, in which the German researchers had assumed that the students were comfortable. They'd grown up with the internet, so you know, they knew the ins and outs, and they were going to use it for everything they ever did. And it turned out they didn't. But I do think, basically, they to sum it up, if you haven't listened to it, the kids use it for entertainment purposes, chatting, keeping up with their friends.
They're very good at using it for specific purposes, but beyond that very or relatively narrow range of uses, they were not as effective.
And they're not necessarily information or internet literate as far as going to find research and you know, really knowing how to use the internet. But I do think that in that case, they would probably be at least more familiar. Like if they were asked to switch from, say, Windows 7 to KDE Linux, they would probably be able to get around more so than somebody who was just getting into computers for the very first time as an adult. And I know a lot of adults who are extremely comfortable with it, but there are some, and there are some kids who look at a computer and say, you know, that's just not for me. I'm not comfortable with that. I really don't want to mess with it. So, I mean, you have to have people who are trained in it. You have to have people who are comfortable with the technology for it to really make a difference in the classroom, right. I think.
So, yeah, there is an amazing potential for technology to really impact education. But ultimately, it just boils down to the people, you know, and I mean, that's no real big surprise. I mean, it can be a surprise if you're one of those technologists, you know, a futurist who looks ahead and says, look at the amazing tools they'll be at our disposal, because that they often will presuppose that we will be adept at using them. Turns out people are a little more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. So I fall into the cautiously optimistic camp. Mm-hmm. In that I definitely see the potential for technology to help, and I am hoping that it does. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to concentrate on that.
Okay, then. Sounds fair to me.
Okay. Well, that was a good discussion about technology and education. We do have one other one planned, specifically looking at the way to conduct research online and the most effective skills that you can develop and some tips for you guys out there if you are needing to research something specific. What's the best way of going about it? That'll be coming up in a future podcast. So if you guys have any other questions about education and technology, or just other technology topics in general, you can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badeda. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.